Okay, welcome back, all of you Duddits fan club members and constant readers, to another episode of Spooky Movie Squad, the horror movie podcast that reviews the best and worst and everything in between in horror, one movie at a time. I'm your host, Otis, and tonight, like always, I am joined by the Spooky Movie Squad, and that squad consists of Katie,
Hi,
Emma,
woohoo,
and Mike.
Yes, Micah. Yeah. No, definitely tell me all your secrets.
Though, sit back and relax and enjoy our review of the American science fiction horror film based on the 2001 novel, Dreamcatcher. Four friends hung a dreamcatcher in their cabin. It's about to catch something. It cannot stop. Yeah.
It's a really long...
You know what's really funny? The tagline on IMDb is... based on a Stephen King novel.
It's probably somewhere on this like cover. It's just like the Dreamcatcher is like one third of the picture, and then it's forgot the lady's name in the middle of the road. But yeah, hit that music.
Take a seat and take a rest. From behind the curtain, a disconcerting nod. It's time to listen to the Spooky Movie Squad.
Happy spookies, everyone. This is episode 352 of this illustrious podcast, and it's chapter 3 in our month of Stephen King movies. So I am very, very excited. When we thought this movie up, I was really pumped to read it again and watch the movie. I had thoughts about the movie a long time ago. The movie came out 2003. I most definitely watched this probably a year later, or I don't know if I went to the theater to watch it. I think this was rented it or found it somewhere and checked it out. But I was a bit grumpy leaving this movie, but watching it again and reading it, little bit softer on this. But 40 Uninitiated, I'm talking about Dreamcatcher. So this movie is, yes, the story is primarily about four friends on a hunting trip that encounter an invasion of aliens. But what type of aliens, Otis? Or do they have ray guns? No. Do they like have blade hands and they eat people like Starship Troopers? No. They're parasites. They do have one weapon. These weasel things that come out of your butt, and those weasels are really good at killing things. This movie is based off the 2001 novel by Stephen King. No shit. But this one was an interesting story. This was originally going to be called Cancer. That name seems, Katie was like, that's a terrible name for it. His wife actually persuaded him to change the title to Dreamcatcher, or just change it, really. It makes a lot of sense. After you, like, the book, it's a lot more allusions to cancer in different ways. There are a lot of things in the story that are pretty cancerous. And I like the name, but it makes sense that they changed it. Now, around the time of this book being made in 2001... Stephen King survived a car accident from 1999. He got hit by a van, and it was an old man, like in the beginnings of dementia, I believe, just destroyed him, knocked him the fuck out. And there were talks that he might not actually survive. And there's one story he always talks about. Someone on death row sent him a letter while he was recuperating, telling him, hey, could you just tell me the end of the Dark Tower series? Because I don't know if you're going to make it. And he told him, he wrote back, he's like, if I knew what the ending was, I would have told you, man. My bad. hopefully you can get the last book. But he's like, nah, I'm dying soon, bud. So he's like, I'm sorry. But fun fact, the fact that Stephen King was hit by a van is in the Dark Tower stories. He actually wrote himself into the story. The Dark Tower books get really meta and weird later on. But it's an interesting one. He was clean at this point. A lot of the earlier books and movies were absurd. Well, this is absurd too. But absurd to the point that he wouldn't remember that he wrote them or did anything involving it, but he was under the influence of Oxycontin for his pain. And a couple of years later, he actually said that he doesn't really like this book that much. And it's a shame because the kid aspects of it, the movie does dip into all the scenes when they're children and they meet their friend Duddits and things like that. It's probably the best part of the book. He can write the shit out of kids dealing with issues in a weird town. He is really good at that. Sure, he can make monsters and stuff. He's perfect at that. But anything with just kids dealing with stuff or meeting a new friend and stuff like that, he is money at. So it's a shame he doesn't like this book because I think it's pretty solid. The movie has, it's actually crazy different from the book. When I was watching it with Katie, I was like, well, I would pause it and say, oh, that's changed. There was no helicopter with a gun on it, but it was just a car chase in the snow. But that's fine. That's fine. But no, this one's full of famous people, the movie. Morgan Freeman is the villain. Thomas Jane, hey, he's back from The Mist and doing Punisher and other things. I can't think of another Thomas Jane movie. Jason Lee, my boy from My Name is Earl, and any, well,
almost all
Mallrats for sure.
Kevin Smith movies, yeah.
And then we have Damian Lewis. Now, apparently he was in Band of Brothers, Katie.
Yes, he was. He was Captain Winters.
Yeah, we were looking at him. Katie's like, that face is familiar. It's like, I know him from something. I was like, oh.
Okay, it started as Captain Winters, okay.
And then Timothy Oliphant. Hey, it's our boy from The Mandalorian and Santa Clarita Diet. A damn good show that got canceled. Tom Sizemore. He's always a villain in things. He's got a grumpy old face, but he did pretty good in this movie. And Donnie Wahlberg. He's not the Wahlberg that beat the shit out of that one guy and put him in a coma. No, he's the one that's married to Jenny McCarthy. So cool.
He's a new kid on the block.
Yes. I didn't realize that his brother was going to be a new kid, but he didn't want to. Or he was in it for like a little bit, then he left.
Yeah,
to go do Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Yeah, and beat people to, in the comas. So this is a hoot. But Emma, what did you think about the movie Dreamcatcher?
I had fun with it. I've seen it before. It was a very long time ago. I remember thinking, yeah, no, I'm okay with things not coming out of my butt. I'd be perfectly okay with that not happening ever. But I love this movie. I had a great time with it. It's just fun. It's goofy. So aliens, yeah. Go Micah.
All I have seen about this movie since the last time I watched it, which was probably the time that Emma watched it, was the last time I watched it. But I definitely saw this as a,
it was a within the last younger, 14 years.
A younger person. It came out when I was in high school, so I had to have seen it while I was in high school. But I will die. All I have seen about this movie over the years is just how bad people really don't like it or how bad it was and all this stuff. You know what? I'm going to go die on this hill of I fucking love this movie and I think it holds up pretty goddamn well. I don't care that it doesn't match the book because they really did turn it into a like top to bottom full ass alien movie. Like, it's like taking World War Z and completely changing the point and the narrative of it, but actually having it be okay, you know, it wasn't the worst thing that they could have done. I think the best thing that these people did with these movies was like try to take them away from the book as much as possible.
Yeah,
but no, I absolutely, this is on my banger list. You know, I don't know who cares about that, but yeah, no, this is an absolute banger, and I'm so glad we got to watch it again. Katie?
I really like this movie. I didn't read the book, so I have no point of reference besides Otis, you know, stopping the movie every 10 minutes to tell me, like, the thing that changed it from the book to the movie. But besides the shit that changed, like, I don't care about the shit that changed because I didn't read the book. So I thought it was great. The only thing wrong with it now is, like, you know, some not great CGI in a couple of parts. But, you know, it's I don't know, what, almost 10 years old at this point?
Yeah.
Right? So
2003.
Oh, no, 20 years old. Sorry. I thought it was had a different date for the movie. But yeah, 20 years old, and it still looks mostly decent. There's just like a couple of instances where you're like, okay, yeah, this is an older movie. But it was good. I liked it. I liked the story. And I thought the aliens were interesting enough and scary enough that it definitely just, like Micah said, works as a full alien flick. And then the government officials, it seemed right. Like, that's how the military would react. So I really liked it.
Ooh, sorry, I have one more point that I left out. I love the fact that there are multiple bad guys for different reasons. The whole enemy of my enemy is also my enemy kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think like the last 35, 40 minutes of this movie
Don't
just
spoil.
Went. No, I'm not talking about anything in particular. I'm just saying it went so fast. They
yes.
jammed a bunch of shit in, and for some reason it all fucking worked.
Yep.
The pacing at the beginning is so slow compared to the second half of this movie, but it's like, yeah, okay, you built a world and then delivered on it. All right, well done.
I like this movie. Now, as a solid just sci-fi alien movie, it's pretty dang good. Now, if I didn't read Dreamcatcher and finish it maybe 48 hours before I watched it, I probably would like it a little bit more. But me reading that book and understanding what they had to cut, this movie is still 2 hours and like 12 minutes long. It's a long movie, but it still felt like it felt rushed. Like Micah said, the last 30 minutes moved so fucking quick. It's crazy how fast it goes. But like I said, Stephen King, he is really good at young characters. He is solid at that. And go figure, he enjoys kids dealing with issues and getting powers. It's one of my 7 words, but I'm going to say it again later. Hey, go figure, more kids in the town of Derry that have psychic powers. Man, this town's just full of kids with the shine. Go figure. But it's really good. I liked it. Now, the book, it's pretty dang good. It's a shame that the creator doesn't like it. But I really, really, really like the book. People's attitudes change. General Curtis, his name was Kurtz in the book, but they changed it to Curtis for reasons. But he wasn't as crazy as he was in the novel. Everyone knew he was absolutely insane. And in the novel, if you were close to the infection or got the infection, you got a low-grade case of telepathy. So everybody could read each other's minds in the military base, and that just made it worse for people because they could feel his crazy aura coming off his body. General Kurtz was crazy as shit.
Boy, howdy.
And Mr. Gray, in the movie, they had to kind of differentiate if it was Jonesy talking or Mr. Gray. So they gave him an English accent. I'm fine with that. There was a lot more monologue in the book with Jonesy in his little room and him talking to Mr. Gray. And Mr. Gray was very much a emotionless thing. And then he was asking him a lot of questions about how things work. And there's a scene where they go to a diner and Jonesy introduces Mr. Gray to food for the first time, and he eats bacon, and he thinks bacon is the coolest fucking thing in the world. And he's like, you just get this anytime? He's like, yeah, man, that's how it works. He's like, bacon's awesome. He's like, yeah, man. Yeah, no shit. It was weird. They had this weird relationship, like a buddy kind of situation, but still Mr. Gray was on his way to do something really evil, and Jonesy was trying to stop him. Now, what I'll do is go through the movie's plot, and then I'll go back real quick and just explain the novel. It absolutely deviates in a lot of points. The skeleton, the main road of both of these stories go the same direction. They both end up at the water facility plant. But how people get there, the shape of people that get there, and the weapons that people have absolutely changes from the book to the movie. I liked the book's ending with people, but it was cool to see how things went. One big change, and I was talking to Katie about it, and I think it just makes sense because it was 2003, but Duddits, the character, has Down syndrome. It was a very big thing in the novel, and I thought, that's weird they didn't have an actual actor with Down syndrome do it, but then I was thinking 2003, it was like, there probably weren't that many, and it was just probably harder for them to get the job, because they could just have a kid just act simple and just go about their day, which is what they did. Now, if this came out around now, most definitely Duddits would have been an actor that has Down syndrome. And because there's a couple of them, like Peanut Butter Falcon, that movie with Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, there's an actual actor with Down syndrome, and he's really good. So it probably would have been him just playing the role of Duddits. So that kind of ties into the language and how Duddit sounds. They write how he talks in the book, and they do have a quick translation because some people are like, what'd he say? He's like, no, he said peanut butter. He's like, oh, okay. I just don't understand him, but I'm fine with that. But if this movie came out a little bit later, most definitely it would have been a Down syndrome real actor. And I'm fine with what they did, but it's a thumbs up for me. It's really fun. All the relationships with the guys, it's really good stuff. It made me have feels, and I'm a big old robot, so it's hard for me to get feels from things, but I liked it. So we'll get through this story pretty quick, and then I'll talk about other things later. So we meet up with Jonesy, Beaver, Pete, and Henry, four friends on their way to a hunting trip, but we have to go back 6 months because we get a little intro of everybody. So we meet up with Pete. He's a car salesman. It's Timothy Oliphant. And so he's trying his best not to be the creepiest person in the room, but he helps this young lady with her car problem. Her keys are lost and it's raining, and she has to get to this meeting to sell a house because it'll be the biggest sale of her life. Now, Pete has the ability of tracking things, and he wiggles his finger in a circle. So he goes back to the store where she was, guesses her name before she says it, and walks the same path she took and does everything she did without knowing, you know, and then finds her keys for her. Hooray, he's a nice dude. Does not look like a nice dude in front of this lady, but he's like, hey, meet me for dinner this Friday. And she's like, yeah, I'm not coming back. And he's like, yeah, you're not coming back. So we instantly see that they have abilities and they're not the best at it, or just they don't care about hiding it anymore. Because we meet up with Jonesy, and he is a professor at a school, and he's talking to a kid that cheated. And he told him that, hey, you weren't there for this test, and rips up his test that he cheated with. He's like, you're going to have to write me an essay about this. And he's like, how did you know? And he's like, I just know. And Beaver is just at a bar, and then he gets an inkling to call Jonesy. And so he tells him, he's like, hey, I don't know why I called, but just be careful out there, bud. And he's like, okay, yeah, I'll be fine. And meet up with Henry. He's a psychiatrist, a suicidal psychiatrist, and he has tons of dreams in a book about killing himself. And it's weird. You would think a psychiatrist that can read minds would help people out, but he is not really good at talking to his clients because he talks to this overweight guy and just causes him to break his little table and run out in a fit because he tells him the truth, and not even like a easy end kind of truth, but this is the full 100% truth and you're not ready to hear this. So all of these guys have their issues. So like I said, they have telepathic powers. Some of them are stronger than others. So as Jonesy is heading home to his wife, he sees something across the street. Now, we don't understand what it is at first, but he kind of squints and he walks out into the road and gets plowed by a vehicle. His body is jacked up. In the ambulance, he dies twice and they get him to come back to life. And he sees a young little boy. And I forgot what the boy said. Oh, look out for Mr. Gray. Now, they don't translate it instantly the first time, so it's just, you kind of hear a mush mouth, and I'm like, what the fuck did he say? You know? But that's all that happens. And then we get a quick 6 months later. Now we catch up. Hades like, God damn, he looks fine. Yes, in the book, after 6 months, he's healed up, ready for the hunting trip. And they're like, wow, you healed pretty good. He's like, yeah, reasons. So the shine does different things, and it's a hell of a power. So I don't know. I shrug my shoulders. Different people can do different things with the shine. I don't know. Carrie was out there just doing wild shit with her, so I have no clue why. So we meet up with the boys out in the cabin in the woods called Hole in the Wall, and they are in an isolated lodge in the Jefferson Tract. So they're pretty close to Derry, Maine. Yes, the same Derry where Pennywise the Clown is, and a lot of other stories. And now, when the kids are younger, they are, what was it, 83? We calculated, Katie, or 84? 1984?
85.
So, a few years before the Losers Club, the adults. Yeah.
80, yeah.
The adult version of the Losers Club comes back for round two with Pennywise and beats the shit out of Tim Curry or Peter Skarsgård, depending on which one you watched. So this town, Derry, is still scary and weird. Kids still disappear. And everyone just says, this is weird. Everyone just kind of knows that you can disappear here. And they don't really talk about it, but it's odd. So even now, the kids are like, yeah, you're not really supposed to go out by yourself because you might get kidnapped. So we see that Jonesy is chilling, reading a book out in the woods. And he sees a deer, a big old beautiful deer. It's not a deer, it's a person. So they talk about this. It's a real psychosis that happens when you're hunting. Actually, when you're doing something that you're so sure of, and then later on, they're like, you didn't see any of that. But they called this one, I think it was called deer madness, where people have been murdered hunting because either they're not wearing orange or red or any bright colors. But other people will be like, oh, that's a deer over there. And they shoot it and they hit a person and they will swear up and down that they saw a deer because they want to see a deer because they're so excited about it. Things change. So that's what that metaphor was. You see a deer for a few seconds. So, but it's a person named Rick McCarthy. Oh, man, he's been out in the woods for a certain amount of time. In the book, they actually talk about it. He loses 7 days of his life. He cannot remember what happened. He still thinks it's like, I think Sunday, and they're like, what? It's Saturday, bro. Like, he lost like almost a week of his life. Where the fuck was he? So Jonesy and Beaver let him inside the cabin and they let him dry off and warm up. Rick McCarthy is super gassy and he's got a big old stomach, big old belly, and it seems to be jiggling and moving. That's really weird. So Jonesy and Beaver, they see that all the forest critters are leaving. They are moving away and out of the forest. Bears and rabbits and wolves and wild dogs, everything's running together. There's no like, oh, I'm scared of you because there's something worse out in the woods. So they see two helicopters, military helicopters, that tell them that this area is quarantined and they need to stay inside. They try to tell him, hey, we got a sick person in here, but they don't give a shit. So Jonesy and Beaver, they go back into the cabin and they put Rick to bed because he's just so gassy. He's just pooting everywhere. But Rick McCarthy gets up and heads to the bathroom, but there's a trail of blood leading into the bathroom. So they bust the door open and they find Rick on the toilet. Oh, he's just pooping because I heard him drop a big old loaf a second ago. No, Rick is dead and his butt has a giant hole in it because he falls off the toilet. Something is wriggling in the toilet bowl. Beaver sits on it and keeps it trapped. Jonesy, with the brightest, smartest person in the bunch, I guess maybe, runs to the garage to find tape because they're going to tape the lid down and keep whatever the fuck is in that toilet stuck in there.
No amount of tape would do anything if a 150-pound man sitting on it can't keep this bitch down.
Yeah, it was a terrible idea.
Duct tape is not stronger than the weight of a 150-pound man.
Yeah.
It just ain't.
It's silly. But as Jonesy is working to find the duct tape in the garage, Beaver has a weakness. He has a weakness for toothpicks. So he has to have one in his mouth to chew on. And it happens in the book. It actually causes him to die. Spoilers. But he drops his pile of toothpicks. And one, actually two toothpicks are still nice and clean in this bathroom of blood. And he goes to reach for it a little bit closer and closer. His ass gets off the toilet bowl. And boom, the thing jumps out of the toilet. Now, the military calls them shit weasels. And that is legit what they look like. They are gray. They have like this scorpion tail kind of situation. It's like three prongs so they can grab things. And a mouth of teeth. And Beaver has himself a fight. His hand gets bit and he loses all the fingers on his right hand. And he gets bit in the face. So as Jonesy comes back with the duct tape, he sees Beaver just getting absolutely destroyed. And he tells Jonesy to leave. Get out of here. I'll hold it. And then we see Beaver get murdered by the shit weasel. Jonesy holds the door closed. But it's an old door and a doorknob breaks. Oh no. And as he is in fear of the shit weasel, he turns around and sees a gigantic alien standing in front of him. The alien gets really close and explodes into a red cloud that goes inside of Jonesy's body. We'll be back. So Henry and Pete, they're heading back from grabbing groceries and they're driving their car in this very terrible snow. And they swerve out of the way of a lady sitting in the middle of the road and crash their SUV. So Henry goes to go get help, and Pete stays with the woman. There is a whole chapter about Pete walking back to the SUV to grab the beers that were in the back of the car because he is an alcoholic. And there's a whole thing about him because his leg is really messed up and him wasting time and energy to get the beer because he needs the beer. So Pete goes back for the beer, and as he is sitting, we see that the lady is laid over in the snow, and then she just kind of jiggles a little bit, and we see another shit weasel come out of her body. So Pete talks about Duddits, and so this is one of the first deviations from the book. Pete and his drunken, I don't know.
Idiocy? Thought.
It's not even idiocy because he calls it, but he says that Duddits is special and gave them powers. And for some reason, it seems like Duddits was preparing them for something. He doesn't know what. And he says that Duddits has to be from, like, another planet. He's so special and pure. He has to be some type of an alien or something. He can't just be a human. And then, as he is peeing Duddits' name in the snow, the shit weasel comes out and tries to bite his dick off. And so...
And what? What handwriting he had when solid, he wrote that.
Solid handwriting. And so Pete fights off the shit weasel and falls into the campfire and burns it off. That's how he beats it in the book. And so, hooray, Pete did it. I'm happy for him. So one thing they leave out in the book is the connection of the four guys. Well, technically five. But anytime something happened to one of them, the other ones knew. So as Henry is walking back to the cabin to get help, he feels that something happened to Beaver. He doesn't know what, but there's a big exclamation point over his head. And then he gets the feeling that Jonesy is on a snowmobile coming his way. Hooray! He can hop on with Jonesy. Oh, wait, that's not Jonesy. Something told him to hide. So Jonesy, that is in his mind warehouse. Though this is new to the movie also. I don't think it gives it a name, but Jonesy does have an idea that all the memories in his head are in this giant warehouse, and he can grab a certain memory and look at it. It's kind of like what I think in my head is there are multiple little Otises, and there's just Rolodexes of memories, and that's how I imagine how my brain is. So, makes sense. But Jonesy has run off into a small room, and he is hiding from Mr. Gray for some reason. Doesn't make sense. But Mr. Gray can inhabit his body, control it, but he can't get into this one tiny, stupid room with a tiny little lock on it. The book explains a little bit more why he can't get into that one spot. But Henry hides in the snow and does not let his friend Jonesy see him. Now, like I said, Jonesy does break through sometimes and talks. And then Mr. Gray has an English accent and smiles really scary. probably the scariest goddamn thing that he does. It's just like he'll be looking normal and then just smile, but he like tilts his head all crazy and he looks like an absolutely crazy person. So Mr. Gray grabs Pete and he's like, hey, let's get out of here, bud. And he's like, hey, Pete, do you know how to get to the highway from here? And he's like, why the fuck do we need to do that? When you go back to the cabin, he's like, nah, we ain't going to the cabin. He's like, you're not Jones. He's like, shut up. And gets him on the snowmobile. So he's using Pete's tracking ability to get him closer to something. Now, like I said, the movie has to speed through things, but his first point of interest was the dairy water water line. He wanted to go to dairy, and they do go to dairy because he wanted to get to the water for reasons. But they get there, and it was taken down in many years, and Jonesy didn't know it was taken down, so he couldn't find that memory, and he was real pissed. He has, like, this, like, temper tantrum in the snow. I think he actually falls on the ground, starts kicking and stuff, and he's like, wow, this dude's a bitch. Because Mr. Gray doesn't understand emotions, and the longer he's in this body, he starts to become human. He actually says he hates that he has emotions now because he doesn't know how to control them. So anytime he gets mad, he just like punches things and kicks things and just like spits because he doesn't know what to do with his hands. So he's just a mean old man. So while all of this is happening, we see that a military group that deals with extraterrestrials. So in this world, this weird world of space clowns that'll eat your fear, and girls with telekinesis that just don't like going to proms, there are aliens, and they have come to Earth multiple times, gotten their ass kicked, USA, USA, and now they're back for another round of ass whoopings. For some reason, they landed in the snow, and they keep saying that they come in peace, there's no infection, there is an infection, and they just want to hang out. They don't want to fight. But the military says, fuck you, bro. This is America, Jack, and blow them the shit up. So they take out all the aliens. Hooray! One got away. It's in someone's body. Now, we see that Colonel Curtis, not Kurtz, says that he's going to retire after this mission, and he has Captain Owen Underhill is his second in command. He's like, after this, bud, or Buck. He calls everybody Buck in the book. He's Bucko. Like... yeah, you get the takeover, Buck. He says praise Jesus a lot. It's weird. And hallelujah in the book. He's, like I said, he's a weird guy. But he tells him, like, hey, you'll be in charge after this. Let's go kick some more alien ass. And they high five and freeze frame. So they head out to the forest, and the helicopters destroy a lot of the aliens. But a few of the aliens get to their ship, and they start doing stuff, and the ship starts glowing. What are they doing? And the ship explodes. That red mist. A few of the helicopters get caught up in it. That's not good. And Owen and Kurtz head back to town because they're like, oh, shit. Those guys are probably sick or dead. So at this point, we see that Henry is skiing because he's trying to find a way out somewhere. He doesn't have a point to go, but... he gets caught by the military because they have made this wide boundary around Maine, honestly. And so Henry gets grabbed and brought to the town, and he is put into the electrified fence with everybody else that may be infected. So as he is listening to Curtis and Owen's plans, he talks to Owen and tells him, like, hey, that dude in there is absolutely insane. I don't know if you know that. And he does not give a shit about any of these humans. And you seem to care. So you should help me get out of here and stop the real person that is dealing with this. My friend Jonesy. He's got an alien in his body. And Owen looks at him and says, I believe you. And that's it. The book, he has to do so much to make Owen make him believe him. Because he's like, I don't know you, dude. And he's like, I know your name. He's like, okay, whatever. I know when you were a kid, you did this bad thing and you never told anybody. He's like, oh, shit. So Owen finds a way to cause a distraction, and Henry and Owen head off in a vehicle to go stop Jonesy or Mr. Gray from poisoning the water hole. That's what he wants to do. So unfortunately, Curtis, he gave him a fancy gun but it had a tracker in it because Curtis is that type of crazy. So Henry and Owen are heading to Duddits's house to pick him up. Now, they kind of go over some things. So the way that they find Duddits, they were on their way to see a picture of Tina Schlossinger's pussy. That is like one of the first lines in the book. But apparently in this abandoned Tracker Brothers place, it wasn't it. They're like, the picture's on the wall. All her stuff's out, man. We got to go see it. So on their way to see this picture of a vagina on a wall, they see that some high school kids are trying to make a mentally handicapped child eat dog poop. And so they threaten the kids with, I'll tell everybody, my boy Pete, he's the fastest kid. You ain't catching him. And he's like, oh, man, we can't catch him.
You're right. We can't. I've heard that name.
He's fast as shit. So they leave. So they pick up Duddits and they lead him back home. The book shows that at that point, I think they just started high school, or they were last year of middle school. They stay with Duddits all the way through high school. They hang out all the time. They play card games, and they play, it's just called Duddits Wins. He puts down any card, whatever, and they all laugh, and then Duddits wins. So he wins everything. They are the best of friends. They also help find one of Duddits's really close friends. In the movie, they made it seem like they didn't know her, but a little girl was lost. Now, a lot of people think that she may have gotten kidnapped by that same person that kidnaps kids. No, she was in the sewer, but it was kind of like Duddits's little girlfriend. She went to the same school with him, and she got lost. So they kind of put their powers together, and they find her. So they are heroes in the town, and everyone's like, wow, those kids are really good. They do a couple of really cool adventures in the book. So Duddits is awesome. So unfortunately, with life and friendship and things like that, none of the adult boys have kept up with Duddits. Now, 6 months before this, a few of them were going to visit Duddits, but they didn't. And they would have known that Duddits has leukemia, and it's really bad now. So Duddits already knows that Henry was coming to pick him up. So even in the book, just out of nowhere, in the middle of the night, Duddits' mom hears him singing the Scooby-Doo song, and he's getting dressed. She's like, what are you doing, bud? And he's like, Henry's coming to pick me up. It's like, what? And so when Henry shows up, the mom's like, yeah, he's been waiting on you. What are you doing? And he's like, we got to go save the world. And Duddits like, I got to go save the world, mom. She's very upset. The movie version was like, yeah, I want him to go with you. But the book one, she was like, I don't want my child to die out in the world. But he's like, I need him. So they head off toward the Quabbin Reservoir because Mr. Gray is going to dump one of those shit weasels into the water. And then that's going to absolutely infect everybody in Derry, in Maine. And then with an army of shit weasels, he can take over the world, apparently. So Owen heads in to stop Mr. Gray. Henry and Duddits stay in the vehicle for reasons, but they don't stay too long because General Curtis comes out with a helicopter with a machine gun on it and chases everybody away.
Wild.
Now, Owen shoots the helicopter down, but not before getting a couple bullets in his chest. And
so anyways, I started blasting.
And Owen dies.
Fucking chaos.
Yeah. Oh, no. So Henry grabs a machine gun and heads inside of the reservoir to stop Mr. Gray. Now, the shit weasel is on his way to the water hole, but he shoots it. Hooray! And Mr. Gray is really pissed off about this. Now, while this happens, we see Duddits come into the room. And Mr. Gray is really confused about Duddits because he's like, oh, you were trying to plan something, dude. But your plan is going to fail because I'm the bad guy. Ha ha ha. And he, you know, laughs at the sky. And so he stabs Duddits in the chest with his weird tentacle tail. So he gets out of Jonesy's body and turns to a giant alien monster. And then, oh my lord, Duddits is also an alien. So Pete's guess at the beginning of the movie was real. And Duddits starts fighting on the alien. So it's alien on alien action. Now, while this is happening, the shit weasel made one egg. And that little shit weasel came out and it's crawling toward the waterhole. So Duddits wins, but he also dies. Sad day. What a good character. And not possessed Jonesy steps on the shit weasel. Hooray, the day is saved, thanks to the Powerpuff Boys. So, Emma, who or what was your favorite character or thing in Dreamcatcher?
I love Duddits. Duddits was great. I just, his innocence and just, I don't know, the whole dynamic between the four kids and Duddits was incredible. And I loved it. It was very heartwarming to be as cheesy and worm referencing as possible.
Did you say heartwarming?
I did say heartwarming because I thought it would be funny. Okay. But yeah, so Duddits, Micah.
My favorite character is Mr. Gray.
Ooh.
I absolutely loved the stylistic change, you know, that I'm not sure what the actor's name is. But
Damian Lewis.
Yeah. His acting on this was fucking awesome. So well done. My favorite thing about this movie, though, is the absolute campiness of the acting for a Stephen King film. Like, it just, it's, you get so many top tier actors to do something so campy and silly that it's just, they nail it so well. Like, the thing is like, you need that, I don't know, it's almost like stories just get better when they're super bleak and dark like that, or science fiction-y, because science fiction always deals with these political things that we're all dealing with anyway.
Yeah.
But have that little bit of camp where it's like, yeah, we know it's not true, but we're just having a good time playing a good story, you know? And in a lot of Stephen King films, you either get the ones that are, they take it really, really fucking serious, or, you know, kind of camp. So yeah, I love the absolute vibe of all the acting in this movie and how it seemed like they all got on board to do the same style for this movie. So that was my favorite thing. Katie.
To do something different, I really liked Henry a lot. I liked his ability to like telepathically communicate with Duddits from question mark however many miles away they were, and to be so in tune with his friends that he knew exactly, like, nah, that's, you're not right, something's wrong,
right?
Like, immediately, without even having said a word, he immediately knew that something was wrong with
Jonesy.
And then when he fucking sneaks into the quarantine military base and just starts fucking shining all of the military folks and like getting them to to trust him, and that was fantastic.
It really was.
My favorite character in the movie and book is Duddits. Duddits is the best. Like I said, Stephen King is really good with kid characters. Now, if the kid has an issue, probably even cooler. It's just cute. Just a cute little character. It's all smiles in the book. He was all smiles while they were doing stuff. And he was ready to do work. Like he said, he was singing a Scooby-Doo song. He's got to, you know, got some work to do now. So he's ready to go. After we go through the favorite and least favorite, I'll talk about the book real quick. The ending is completely different. But Emma, who or what was your least favorite character or thing in Dreamcatcher?
Power-hungry military folks.
Yeah, that'd do it.
I know it's necessary in certain roles and certain story plot points, whatever. And most of the time, it's really well played out, including right here. Morgan Freeman did a great job being a creepy fucko in here. But I cannot stand power-hungry folks with guns.
Yeah.
It gives me the heebie-jeebies in all the ways. And it's the creepiest thing for me. It's the scariest part of all the things. Micah.
I think my least favorite part, I don't know, I didn't really have one. But my like the most jarring thing about this movie is when the actors try to do Stephen King vernacular, like the way he writes the characters talking in his book, and they try to say some of those things, like Morgan Freeman walking around going, you know, Sonny and Bucko and Laddie. It's just like, oh my God, it's, I know that you're, that's the point, is you're delivering it like that, but it's just so like, I don't know. nobody talks like that.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's odd, but it's so Stephen King that it's just like, well, of all the things that I could be have a least favorite thing, I guess that's going to be that category for tonight. Katie.
Colonel Curtis.
Yep.
I love Morgan Freeman, but his character was a piece of shit in this movie.
Correct.
I mean, the alien was bad, but Colonel Curtis was way worse. He was like, fuck it, kill them all. Like, I don't give a fuck. Murder everybody. Whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Immediately, he wasn't like, oh yeah, let's find the cure, or let's hunt down the whatever the last alien is, or whatever. He's like, nah, fuck it. Murder them. Murder all the people who have been infected.
Mow them down.
I don't care.
My least favorite thing about this movie was the fact that it wasn't a miniseries TV show. I think it would have been. I would
love this as a miniseries.
Yeah. I think a lot of scenes and moments would have got time to breathe. It had been pretty solid. Like, shit, 8 episodes be pretty damn good. And we'd get to see the scenes like when Mr. Gray gets to eat bacon for the second time in his life and it goes horribly wrong. There's a lot of scenes I'm like, damn, I want Katie to see this in live action because it's gross and stupid. But like I said, a lot of Stephen King stories don't get enough time. I mean, I'm happy that it got 2 movies because I don't think you could make 1 movie with kids dealing with a clown and instantly go to adults dealing with the same clown. It would be so long and you'd have to cut out so much stuff. So real quick, I'll just talk about the book. So like I said, that it deviates pretty quick into the movie. So inside of Jonesy's head, Mr. Gray is constantly finding out ways that Jonesy is trying to sneak around him and fixes it. At some point, Jonesy makes a phone inside of the room and he calls Henry. So the scene with the, he's talking on a gun, Jonesy did it. And there were many scenes where he was making the room bigger or Mr. Gray was making the room hot to get him to leave and he makes a thermostat. And it's like, how am I doing this? Oh, well. And Jonesy never thinks about it. So in the book, Mr. Gray is an hour ahead of Henry and Owen in the vehicle. And Major Kurtz or Curtis is 30 minutes behind them. So it's a slow, scary chase through the snow to get to the reservoir. So they realize they have to do something to slow down Mr. Gray or they will not get there in time to stop him. And Duds is like, I have a plan. So Mr. Gray already had bacon for one time and he loved it. So he's like, you need more bacon in your life. So he stops at a gas station or convenience store, grabs a couple packs of raw bacon, some bread, and a big old jar of mayonnaise and makes himself raw bacon sandwiches. And he has the time of his life. And the owner of the store is like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? And so after eating, I don't know how many bacon sandwiches, he ate multiple packs of raw bacon. Jonesy, Mr. Gray, proceeds to throw up and shit himself all the way to the reservoir. He stops many times because he is slowed down. Go figure. You can't drive that good when you're shitting yourself. So he's swerving in the snow. He has to stop. And so that's how they catch up. They make him poop himself a lot. So when they get to the reservoir, Owen gets out to stop Mr. Gray. And Duddits is getting really sick and really tired. And Henry stays with him. So they actually dream and they help Jonesy from his mind take on Mr. Gray. And so they stay in the vehicle the whole time. And Kurtz and another soldier stay out in the woods and they wait on Owen to come back out. So Owen kills a shit weasel and he is standing there about to shoot Jonesy. But Henry and Duddits in the mind help him kill Mr. Gray. There was metaphors about a hospital room in the hospital bed where he was rehabilitating from his broken hip from the car accident. So they put a pillow on Mr. Gray's head and smother him to death. That's how he dies in the book. And Jonesy gets his body back. Hooray. As Owen goes outside to be like, man, this is a great day. I think I'm going to get out of the military. Ba-da-da-da-da-da. He gets lit the fuck up. And so Owen is down on the ground and he looks over at the other soldier and that soldier realizes that Kurtz is going to kill him too. Kurtz has planned to kill all of the soldiers after all of this was done, because he can't trust if anybody wasn't sick. And so he's like, nope, they all got to die. So the soldier kills Captain Curtis, or Colonel Curtis. And then that soldier is on his way back to the vehicle. Oh, I forgot to say, they use another soldier with a shit weasel inside of him to be their tracker. So with the psychic powers of him and the weasel, they were able to track Henry. So he gets back to the vehicle and the shit weasel is born and he gets murdered by the shit weasel. So Henry and a dead Duddits are in the vehicle. Henry blows up the car with a shit weasel and he goes and finds Jonesy. The end. So 6 months later, they're talking and Jonesy realizes that Mr. Gray was not in charge of his body. It's just the fact that he gave up so fast. And so it's still the metaphor of him, how he dealt with his rehab of his busted hip. If he actually believed that he could do it and fight for his body, Mr. Gray would have got kicked out. But the fact that he was scared and didn't think he was strong enough, Mr. Gray was able to take over. And so Stephen King used the hints of, oh, you created a phone in your mind to talk to your friends. You shouldn't be able to do that if that guy's in control of your body. And so little hints of that he could do anything he wanted, but he never tried because he thought it would be a futile attempt. So fun fact, kids, always try. Stephen King's telling you, if your body's possessed by a evil thing, try, because you might be able to kick it out. Yeah. Jonesy didn't, because he was a little bitch. But he gets better at the end. Hooray. And that's the big differences. There's other things, like I said, but that's the big things. So let's do 7-word synopsis. I have one, and it's, hey, look, it's more kids with shine. I was telling Katie, man, good thing that the True Knot didn't roll over to Derry then, because those kids would have absolutely gotten their shine sucked out of their bodies and tortured for many days.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd have grabbed at it and be like, hey, this isn't even a person. He's an alien. And they would ate his shine. Nah, he would turn to the alien and beat them up.
They wouldn't have been able to catch, was it Pete?
Yeah. He'd have been running. They'd have ran him over.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But that would have been a weird story. Katie.
Okay, I have two. It's just gas. 'Twas not just gas. And then, my anus is bleeding. And shit weasels.
Yeah, she said that the first time she saw like the trail of blood.
My anus.
Micah.
My first one is out the butt and into our hearts. Stephen King vernacular is odd to watch. I know that's the point, but it's funny that trying to portray word for word how his characters talk on screen is just, it doesn't work all the time. Oh Lord, I will never drink again.
That weasel came out and bit him.
Yeah, and then my last one, it is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ma.
Okay, I have a lot. Fuckeries or fuckaroos, we'll try some Viagra. And then fuck me, Freddy, here's to 20 more. And then I had SSDDWTF. And then pardon me, bunking down in mind vault. And then I have two alliteratives. Planet purging parasitic predator plunders Pete's persona.
Thank you.
And then dude Duddits does duty, devolves, destroys danger.
Heck yeah. I came up with another one. It's kind of a Simpsons-y reference, but not really. But not my butt. The Bostonian yelled again. I think it was, they go to get the lemon tree. And it's like, yeah, if we catch that Springfield kid, we'll spray its mouth full of this spray can. Not my mouth, is what he would say. Not my mouth. So
that's right. It's me, Bart Simpson.
I'm like, huh? What?
From Springfield.
Oh, get him. So this film came out March 21st, 2003. So what do you guys think the budget for this film was, Katie?
$50 dues.
Emma.
I also had 50, so I'm going to say $55 dues because this was a loaded cast.
Yeah.
Micah.
I'm going to say $25 dues.
Sneaky. I like that. He went the other direction. Low. Yeah. So.
Not that CGI. That's a lot of money in 2003 CGI.
Yeah, right? Them servers were hot making that shit weasel.
Absolutely. That scene where they like mow down all those aliens and then they blow up the ship. That was so much fucking CGI.
So the budget was $68 dues. Yeah, there were a lot of famous people and a lot of scenes where they had to fucking work on. So what do you guys think the box office was, Katie?
$100 dues.
Emma.
$75 dues.
Micah.
$57 million dues.
$57 million dues. That's trillions.
That's trillions of dollars, Micah.
I did not mean it literally.
Quadrillions? Is that an actual one? Quadrillions?
It was a mistake. I told when I meant everyone.
The millions, billions, trillions. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Oh,
quintillion.
It's the sound that someone hit almost, but I'm just gonna say it. The box office was $75.7 dues. This movie barely made its budget, but technically it is considered a flop. Did not make the money it should have, and probably with all the commercials and shit, it probably didn't make its money. Sadly, it's a fun one, but I don't know. It came out in March, and that's an all right time for scary movies. I guess science fictiony kind of stuff.
March is scary.
Yeah, March can be scary. It's just, I don't know. I don't know if people were not that hype about this movie or not, but I liked it. It looked really cool, and you know, it was gory and weird and shit, but people really didn't dig it. I can't remember if I said this earlier, but this was Stephen King's 27th book. And yeah, he was working hard. He's up to, I think, shit, close to 40 of them. And all the, you know, Dark Tower series and stuff like that. But this book was written right before Black House. And that's the sequel to The Talisman. If you have not read The Talisman, you're missing out. And you're stupid for not reading it. You're not stupid. You're ignorant. But... you should,
not better.
I just
how dare you call me ignorant.
But no, Talisman's a very good story, and he made one with the hero older, dealing with the same weird shit. And it might be connected to the Dark Tower series. It's very connected.
Everything is connected to the Dark Tower series, Otis. You don't have to keep telling us that.
Yeah.
Just like everyone has the fucking shine.
Yeah.
Like every other book has the fucking shine. Carrie had the shine. The Shining was about the shine. Like, Firestarter had the shine. Like, I'm just going down this list, and every other book has the fucking shine in it.
Yeah.
That car probably had the fucking shine. Christine had the shine.
hence why we need a Dark Tower series, because that series would rival The Simpsons in the number of seasons it would end up with.
Yeah, it'd be really good. So, Minority Kill Count, one. There were probably, well, I don't know if the people in the people that were captured, I don't know if there were probably some minorities there, but I don't know if they die in this version. They for sure die in the book, but I don't know.
The only guaranteed one is Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, so let's just count Morgan Freeman. You could say the aliens, because they sure got destroyed, but...
yeah, but that's, no.
Yeah, so the new number is 473, and a Tito Turtle. And a house and a plane full of vampires. So, does anybody have anything else to say about Dreamcatcher before we get out of here?
Have you seen or read The Outsider?
Me?
Yes.
The one about the kids and the gangs?
No, it became an HBO series, but it's kind of similar to this, where it's a alien type thing that's like... duplicating people.
Ooh, I'm gonna write that down. I'm gonna check that out.
I thought you meant that one. It's a good series. It's not Paul Rudd, but the guy that everybody thinks is Paul Rudd. Oh God, Jason Bateman.
Yeah. Ooh, I like him.
Yes, it's good.
Yeah, I thought you meant The Outsiders, that what S.C. Hinton book.
I fucking
with Pony Boy and all the kids.
The Outsiders.
All the kids punching each other in the street over and over. I was like, that's but, good.
The gang of all the 80s hot boys.
Yeah. I was like, I don't think there's any shit wheels in that, Emma, but I might be wrong.
No, I was going to say, if anybody enjoyed this one, check out The Outsider. Or if you enjoyed The Outsider, please give this one a watch.
Yeah.
It holds up. It's good. It's great. I feel like I need to read the book now, because everything that you're saying from the book, I'm like,
It's cute. I really, like I said, all the kid stuff is really cute and really nice. You know, they teach Duddit's curse words, and his mom's not surprised when he starts saying "fut," and they're like, "Oh no, he's saying fun." They're like, "He's not saying fun." They're like, "Yeah, he's saying fun."
That mom's like, "Bitch, I know my kid."
Miss Cavell, he's saying fun. They're like, no, he's not.
I was saying Boo Earns.
But they're real cute. There's a scene where they're at like a carnival and Duddits is like freaking out about everything because it's like color and shit, you know? And they're like, hey, let's go do this. And he's like, holy crap, you know? They're real good with him and they love him and it's really good. But yeah, it's sad that they didn't have the time to show that part of it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for a big chunk of this movie, I was just like, these are the shittiest friends. Like, we're such great friends and we love Duddit so much and he's such a great guy and we haven't seen him in 20 years. Y'all fucking suck.
Yeah.
Y'all are trash. Go hang out with your friend.
Yeah, in the book, this it does happen still, but it's life and kids and people lost parents and stuff, and just sometimes you just don't talk to people. And They weren't trying to avoid him, but I think they said that in the back of their mind, there was a reason that they didn't want to talk to him. And I think it was because they would have known about the cancer and it would have, like, I guess, depressed them to know. So they'd rather just not know. And like I said, there's really weird things that they're dealing with.
Trash friends.
Yeah.
Again, trash friends.
Yeah.
All of my friends are adults and doing things and being adults and having families and kids and medical emergencies and shit like that. Do I talk to all of them and check in on all of them occasionally? More often than once every 20 years? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
A friend that I had since I was 12 and, you know, was like BFFs with this kid they have Down syndrome. Bro, we'd be meeting at least once a year, every year, like having a big like barbecue to hang out. If not, going to see him all the time, especially considering they all live relatively close to fucking Barry.
Yeah.
Trash. Y'all are trash people.
Well, correct.
Half of them are dead, so. Now they're hanging out with Duddits in heaven. That was actually one question that Duddits said. He's like, Pete and Beav, are they in heaven? They're like, yeah. They're like, I hope so.
Yeah.
And then when he dies, he's like, I'm gonna go see Pete and Beav. I'm like, it's like I said, he's so pure. He just wants to hang out with his friends again. So, with that, that is the end of this episode. If you have any other cool fun facts about, I don't know, worms or weasels that come out of your butt, eating raw bacon, I don't know, shooting at Morgan Freeman from a helicopter, you can tweet Katie at
AllentownPod.
We have an email. It is
AllentownPresents@gmail.com.
Facebook at
AllentownPresents.
So this the music you're listening to is Flipping a Combined Effort, Flipping the CE, and where you can find them, Studio Fitas. Thank you so much for the artwork. So this was episode 352 in the pocket, in the books, out of sight. We have one more Stephen King story, and this one, I don't think anybody's watched it. I have not watched this movie, but I read the book and I'm reading it again, and it's pretty fun. I'm very interested in how it's going to be. I will say, I did not hear that many good things about it, but what we like to do is watch movies and try to give it a shot, because I didn't hear that many good things about Hatchet, and I love it, so we'll see how it is. But we're going to see old John Cusack again, dealing with monsters. So, for Katie, for Bella that was somewhere, for Emma and Micah, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back next week with another Stephen King story. Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye.
Toots.
Now that's spooky.